Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Historic preservation is defined as the conservation of buildings, landscapes, or other artifacts with historical significance. The history behind certain structures is undeniable. The Alamo, the so-called cradle of Texas freedom. Mount Vernon, George Washington's estate. Even items as ancient as Stonehenge. These were all in danger of deterioration over time, but they were saved, and it's an ongoing process. What happens when these structures don't have significance beyond that of a single community or even that of a single neighborhood? Those sites might hold more of an emotional hold on a community's soul than a distant estate or castle or battle site. Historic preservation as social justice is a field that's gaining hold in communities across the U.S. Longtime residents step up to save from demolition buildings that have been at the core of a community's history. It's a fight we've heard about in El Paso. A proposed arena is threatening the demolition of a now mostly abandoned neighborhood, which is considered one of the oldest in the city. It's happening in South and Southeast Texas, where Texas freedom colonies emerged. That's where African American landowners established communities post-Civil War. And it's happening on San Antonio's west side. Like many communities that seek social justice through preservation, it's a neighborhood that consists of ethnic minorities, Mexican Americans in this case, and it's poor. Joining us on Fronteras today is Graciela Sanchez, director of the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center in San Antonio and member of the Westside Preservation Alliance. Historian Sarah Zenaida Gould is the director of the Museo del West Side, a project of the Esperanza, and she's co-chair of Latinos in Heritage Conservation. Gould says historic preservation has long been thought of as a field for upper-income white communities.
Buildings worthy historic designation have generally been understood to be structures connected with upper-income white people, individuals, or communities, or movements. And this really does have to do with the history of historic preservation as a field itself. It really did emerge from upper-income communities, especially white women. We actually owe a lot to white women who kind of got the field going as something to do in their spare time. But there's a reason why people think that historic preservation is about saving grand buildings, buildings associated with famous architects or famous people, and it really has to do with the history of the field itself. So when you come to the West Side in its origins was the land west of the San Pedro Creek. So the West Side used to be bigger than it is now. As downtown grew and as the population shifted after 1836, what you see is by the turn of the century and until you get to 1900, there starts to be some sort of encroachment. And then it really gets its big push with the building of the freeway, as you mentioned. Early West Side was ethnically mixed, racially mixed, African American, Mexican American, Lebanese, Syrians, Chinese. Over time, the community became increasingly Mexican American, and that was really aided by the Mexican Revolution. There are multiple train lines that come through the West Side, and the one that's probably the most important is the IGN train, which came from Laredo and brought people from the border. And so during the Revolution, we have this explosion of our population of Mexican nationals. There has long been a tight connection between San Antonio and northern Mexico. So it really wasn't a surprise that so many people came here. But what I think was surprising, even to the people who came, was that they stayed. Because most people had the intention of, oh, this is going to clear up and then I'll go home. And then that war just dragged on, and people started new lives. So the neighborhood became increasingly Mexican-American. It was hit fairly hard by the Great Depression. Unfortunately, what we have seen, and this goes back to the 50s, 60s, after World War II, city investment in the West Side was always low, and it just continued to be low. So people like well, like Rosy Castro, people who were trying to fight to get the city to bring better services, to invest in the West Side. They were there on the forefront with a number of other people working to bring that infrastructure that was lacking. And unfortunately, the West Side has just never really caught up. And so we do have some of the lowest income census tracts in the West Side for the city. And yet, what I think is so important is we may not have the financial capital in the West Side that other parts of the city have, but we are enormously wealthy in cultural capital. All of the aspects of culture that people associate with San Antonio, those are rooted in the West Side.
And it is one of the oldest parts of the city. The city essentially grew out from that core center. So there is obviously history there. There are historical monuments which may or may not have gone by the wayside. Graciela, can you tell us about some of the structures of significance on the West Side that maybe are no longer there, and perhaps some of the regrets that the community may have resulting from that?
So in terms of buildings that we've lost, thousands of buildings, I would say in the 70s from the downtown area, what was then known as Laredito, decimated that whole entire area. Thousands, just thousands of homes. That we're searching for photos of those homes and the neighborhood because, you know, on some level, people saying, well, we've got money, urban renewal, we want to do better for our low-income people of color communities, so let us tear down what exists and let's rebuild because we'll make their lives better. But it was just a whole demolishing of entire neighborhoods of thousands. So you can't find those communities anymore. I can't find my home. I can't find that neighborhood that I grew up in. It's disappeared. I always like to say they ran out of money, thank goodness, so they stopped tearing down homes. And around where the Plaza Guadalupe, we've researched, there were like 113 homes, and they tore everything down. And what the city then was asking of the federal government was that this plaza be created and be given back to the community because they had demolished so many homes. And within that area, there were like 7 or 12 buildings that were saved, including the Guadalupe Theater, the Progreso Theater, and such. So we've been able to save some really important buildings on Guadalupe Street, and some of those have been designated historic, and the city has helped to preserve them by giving and setting aside money. I know just recently in the last couple of years we lost the Malt House. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was interesting in that case because the West Side Preservation Alliance and Esperanza initially started identifying homes and just the institutional buildings like the Malt House to say these buildings are important to us, and we did research on each of those buildings. Then the city's Office of Historic Preservation got excited, and then they joined in, and one of the buildings that we wanted to designate historic and that did get designated historic was the Malt House. And so just regular folks who just ate there all the time on Monday through Friday as special occasions after the Lanier football games, you know, and they would just go there, but also the politicians. And so everybody had a story there. But at some point, somebody wants to put in another gasoline station in that corner because of its prime location, and that historic designation meant nothing.
The Malt House is a particularly difficult story because it was designated in 2013 as a historic landmark in San Antonio. The family that owned it got into debt. So they were approached by a developer who wanted to tear it down to build a 7-Eleven. The family didn't see another way out for themselves. To me, this is just a really devastating thing. You had a family with what we call a legacy business, a business that's been in use for more than 50 years. And yet they found themselves in a very common situation, and they couldn't figure out what their options were. And so to me, that was a failure on the city's part, because we have to figure out how to help people in situations like that. And because they weren't able to get the help they needed, the building came down. And it came down to build a 7-Eleven, a convenience store. And nothing against 7-Eleven. And I actually think what's really salt in the wound is that there are 7-Elevens across the country, including in downtown San Antonio, across the street from the City Hall, 7-Elevens that are inside of historic landmark buildings. But 7-Eleven did not feel that the Malt House was worth that investment.
Probably one of the more famous buildings that did come down was La Gloria.
And La Gloria, can you explain?
La Gloria was started off as a gasoline station.
Not a 7-Eleven.
Not a 7-Eleven. It was a gorgeous building. It was built in 1928. You know, 1928, and a few years later, you have the Depression. So, you know, Mr. Elizondo, being a smart businessman, you know, used the upstairs rooftop as a place for people to start dancing mm-hmm. and probably eating. And so any way to keep that place alive. So it became a little grocery store, the gasoline station, and this rooftop dance hall. Back in 2001, the San Antonio Cultural Arts Center wanted to see about purchasing that building to make it its headquarters. And they had been talking to the owner, and the owner somehow started at $75,000 as asking price, and they went before historic designation to try to get it designated historic. And then the next time they talked to the owner, the price had gone over $100,000, and then $125,000. It just kept on going up in price. The week of the demolition, the price of the building had gone up to like $239,000. Esperanza had just won a lawsuit against the city, and we had $500,000. And so we said, let's give them a check. And we wrote a check, and the owner just didn't even accept it. Just imagine, again, people in the community were holding hands surrounding the building. And so the order came down that the building could be demolished. So people chained themselves. People had raised all this money to try to, again, purchase the building. April 1st, 2002, the building came down, but it took 2 or 3 days. The building was so sturdy. I had never seen so much community support coming to save one building, because people remembered La Gloria as a place that their parents or grandparents had danced, and where little stories of the handsome man who goes dancing with the woman, and they twirl and twirl and twirl around until the woman faints or dies, and then you see the foot of the man, and he's got a rooster's claw or whatever, and it's the devil or whatever. All those stories that just kind of came out. But everybody had this memories, beautiful memories, and everybody wanted to save. And there was an empty lot catty corner that, you know, we were trying to see if they could just swap. And nobody was willing to do it. Nobody was willing to accept the money. And what do we have today in that corner? We have an auto parts store. And that's what they always intended to have there, an auto parts store. And what's catty corner in that empty lot is another gasoline station. There's just so much that's been lost. And so what we're trying to do is what's left that's historic should be saved, so that the cultural fabric, the beauty of small little shotgun homes that are only, you know, 400, 500, 600 square feet, as well as the homes that were more in the middle class neighborhoods that were 1,000, 1,200 square feet, that, you know, you can just see that there was a class difference, but that all of those, that variation of types of homes, types of businesses, should all be preserved, because that is our history.
That's Graciela Sanchez, director of the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center. We're also speaking with historian Sarah Zenaida Gould, co-chair of Latinos in Heritage Conservation. Both Sanchez and Gould are members of the Westside Preservation Alliance. When we come back,
within working class, lower income, communities of color, our architecture is not always valued the same way as architecture in other communities.
More on historic preservation and social justice next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Dance halls where your parents or grandparents met. Restaurants where politicians gathered to chew the fat. Ice houses where one cooled down with a cold beer. Most urban neighborhoods have some version of these. Developers might see those areas as potential income generators, future sites of gas stations, auto parts stores, or parking lots. A movement is growing in these neighborhoods to preserve buildings that preserve the community's history. We're speaking with Graciela Sanchez, director of the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center, and historian Sarah Zenaida Gould, co-chair of Latinos in Heritage Conservation. Gould says historic preservation has come to embrace social justice.
So for about the last 3 or 4 years, Latinos in Heritage Conservation has been promoting the idea of preservation justice, the idea that we know that the field of historic preservation is not neutral, that it has a tendency to put a lot of preference towards great architecture, when in fact the Secretary of Interior guidelines for historic designation allow for both architecture and cultural significance to be equally weighted. And yet, even within the field, people who know that information like the back of their hand, they still tend to privilege the architecture over the cultural significance. But I would also say that they tend to privilege architecture that is associated with particular aesthetics. But what seems to happen is that within working class, lower income, communities of color, our architecture is not always valued the same way as architecture in other communities. So when we talk about preservation justice, we're talking about equity in the way that our structures are recognized, both for their architectural significance and their cultural significance. You know, another great example of that would be the Univision building in downtown San Antonio. That was designed by a person who at the time was sort of a cutting-edge modern architect from Miami, what we now call mid-century modern. And that building, what we heard from City Hall was that it was deemed ugly. Whatever your opinion of the architecture was aside, the cultural significance was undeniable. The first full-time Spanish-language television station in the entire United States, right there on the river in downtown San Antonio, and now it is gone. Communities of color have long struggled to build wealth the way that white communities have through real estate. And one of the challenges that we have is that even when our communities purchase real estate, we often don't have the means to maintain our homes over the long term. And even though we may pass those homes down 2, 3, 4 generations, which is very common here in the West Side, maintenance doesn't always get taken care of. And what we would really like to see is a way to help people learn some of those things that are ancestors knew, because in the past, a lot of us had trade skills. How do you hold on to a house in good condition so you can pass it on so your family can build that investment, you know, in the home? How do we keep our family homes in our families, but keep them in good shape so that they can be passed on to the next generation?
I mean, we're feeling the pressure from all that growth downtown. The developers are seeing an opportunity because the land is cheap and they could care less about the buildings because they can just knock them down. And if they're buying land that's $15,000, you know, where are you going to go? So, you know, these developers are saying, we're going to come in and we're going to do better for you all. The sad part is, you know, that means when you tear down a home and you give someone, you know, well, your home is valued at $25,000 here. I'm going to give you cash for this, or I'm going to write you a check. Oh, I'll give you $50,000. Nobody can go and buy another home for that price. Nobody can rent. You know, $50,000, if you're renting at $1,000 a month, is going to go away pretty quickly. And they're not going to have all the social networks that have been established there for many, many, many years. They're not going to have access to the public transportation that the way that we've been able to move around, if our jobs are downtown because we are working at the hotels or the Riverwalk, it's just, you know, a 5-10 minute bus ride away. All of that is going to go away, and so will that history and the people that belong there and need to be there. We're just feeling those pressures, and there's nothing within, you know, the city government right now that's really helping to create policies that keep people in place, right? So yeah, we are one of the most economically segregated cities. So how are we going to change that? It's not enough to educate everybody to get a BA, or an MA or a PhD. If the jobs don't exist here folks are going to still go somewhere else. And at the end, everybody loses, right? And again, it's just really sad that we find ourselves always in this adversarial position. There's already so much that's been lost. We have to stop. That, I mean, there should just be a policy that says, you know, if it's a building that's over 50 years old, we're going to spend a lot more time reviewing that building before anything gets raised anymore. Yeah, and then figure out solutions for funding the restoration of these homes.
We've been speaking with Graciela Sanchez, director of the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center in San Antonio. We're also speaking with historian Sarah Sanaida Gould, director of the Museo del West Side, a project of the Esperanza, and she's co-chair of Latinos in Heritage Conservation. Gould and Sanchez are also both members of the West Side Preservation Alliance. More of our conversation is online at tpr.org. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Fernando Ortiz Jr. is our editor. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.